This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. We start with Elise Glink on this Monday afternoon. You find her at thinkglink.com and at glink.substack.com. Elise, let's talk about working from home. Are you working from home right now?
I am working from home, John, and you know what? I'm not alone in this. It used to be that I was the only person I knew working from home, but believe it or not, as many as almost 30% of Americans worked from home in the past 7 days in October of 2022, and that is about where it was in 2021, so the pandemic has really changed things.
Yeah, I'll bet it was a lower number in 2019, in other words.
Yes, it was. And what's interesting about it is that I think, you know, bosses, and these numbers come to us from LendingTree, I think some of the senior leadership of different companies thought that they'd be able to get people back. They've tried mandating. They've tried, you know, enticing with free food and whatever. And most people still want to have at least a hybrid schedule where they're working part-time from home. What we did see, though, for Illinois, biggest year-over-year increases in the rate of people working from home. In Illinois, this looked like just, you know, over 50%.
Biggest year-over-year increase. So Illinois, more people are working at home in Illinois than Wyoming.
That is correct.
I wonder why is that?
I don't know. I mean, it's not really a weather thing. It could be the types of jobs that people have. It could be, you know, when you have more knowledge workers, white-collar workers, versus, you know, somebody who's on a factory line or somebody who's out on a ranch, on a, like a sheep ranch in Wyoming, might be a little easier to work from home.
I also think, I think that's it. I also suspect that it's not in small part evidenced anyway by the fact that people aren't downtown Chicago. Those jobs can be done from home. Some people were either afraid to come into the city or got out of the habit of coming into the city, and they're getting away with it. Do you think this is a good thing or a bad thing, or is it neither?
You know, I think that flexibility is really important. One of the things that we've, there are so many lessons from the pandemic, John, and you and I have talked about some of these over the past 3 years, and I can't believe I'm actually saying this, but we are in March going to have the third anniversary of when the world really shut down. And we're almost there now because it was in January of 2020 that we started hearing stories about some crazy kind of infection that was running around Asia. And people were getting really, really sick and going to the hospital. And that's when all the fun and games started with COVID. So here we are coming up on the third anniversary. And I think what we've done is instead of just sending people home and coming back 2 weeks later, which is what, honestly, I expected when I sent my employees home, we've now changed the world because we've kept this up for 3 years. And so what we're seeing now are some of the effects, because nothing ever happens in a vacuum, right? So in downtown Chicago, we are seeing more buildings go into foreclosure. These are big office buildings. We're starting to see some talks about adaptive reuse in major metropolitan areas, major cities across the country for these empty office towers. What can we do with this space if people continue to want to work from home?
What are you guys saying about, I know Tom is not a big fan of the Bitcoin world. He's not so sure about these cryptocurrencies. What's the latest there, Elise?
You know, it's hard to get your mind around the idea that $32 billion could just evaporate. But that's exactly what happened with FTX, which was that big, you know, they're not just Bitcoin, but a crypto platform. And we've been hearing from Sam Bankman-Fried all last week. He's been everywhere talking about how he didn't intend to defraud anybody, and he's so sorry he lost their money, and truly a very interesting strategy for a guy who probably has a huge legal bill that's awaiting him. But what was interesting today is that, you know, we've had two competing stories about Bitcoin, which is where this all started with crypto, right? We had Bitcoin startup, and we've got on one side, and Bitcoin's running around $17,000 a share today, and it's down from over $50,000 at the height. And we've had a story that Standard Chartered, which is a financial services company, came out with today. They announced that they think that Bitcoin could plunge another 70% to $5,000 a coin as an October surprise. Not October, 2023 surprise. But by the same token, Tim Draper is predicting that Bitcoin will reach $250,000 per coin next year. And he thinks the dam is about to break. And so I just thought it was so interesting, John, that we've got two people, this venture capitalist, Tim Draper, who's very invested in Bitcoin, and then Standard Chartered on the other side saying completely opposite things about crypto. And I think that's where it comes down for Tom and me. You know, this, what is this thing that we've invented, we meaning the world, and where is it going?
I guess I should be a little skeptical of somebody who's invested in it, cheering on its appreciation. I mean, he's hardly a disinterested third party in this. He would benefit if it went to $250,000 a coin.
Mm-hmm. Most of the, I feel like most of the analysts these days, for whatever it is they're, you know, putting out guidance on, they're supposed to be separate from the investments that their companies make. But I feel like, you know, when you hear from somebody saying, oh, this company is going to be hit this new high, they're probably invested in it somewhere. And I don't know that to say, I don't know that for sure. And on the other side, I don't think that Standard Charter has bought, you know, betting against the Bitcoin market necessarily. But it is interesting that you've got everybody with their hands in their own pockets, and I feel like in yours, talking about crypto at a time where we've watched four companies, four big crypto platforms go bankrupt this year.
I'm reading from CNBC. Draper's rationale for Bitcoin's breakout next year is that there remains a massive untapped demographic for Bitcoin women. He said 80% of retail spending is done by women, but only 1 in 7 Bitcoin wallets are currently held by women. So he expects that when women get into this, it's going to give it a boom. And evidently, FTX isn't the doom of this thing. I don't know about that, but $5,000 versus $250,000 for Bitcoin, one of them is really wrong.
Well, they could both be really wrong. And this is really what we don't know about any sort of crypto, right? What happened with FTX, where, you know, without anybody knowing it, billions of dollars were sent over to a platform that Sam Bankman-Fried owned 90% of, but said he had no day-to-day control over it. And he doesn't know how that they didn't have the proper controls, because the guy who has come in as the CEO of that company has said, hey, there's like nothing going on here that's supposed to be going on here. And he says, I don't know how that could have happened. Oops, I guess I was, you know, too busy holing up in my, you know, I had so much on my plate. It just slipped by me. Sorry. That to me says a lot about what's going on in the crypto world, which is that it's not regulated. It doesn't seem to be based on anything other than the limited nature of it, right? How many people have mined Bitcoin, and you can only have so many Bitcoin, or all of these different kinds of crypto that have come up. And it just doesn't seem to be based on anything that's real. So I don't know. But it's interesting that two reputable names in the industry, right, Draper and Standard Charter, could have completely opposite views of this. And I think that's a call to action, or I should say a warning call for anybody thinking about investing in crypto. This is really a largely unregulated market. And if you lose your key, you can lose your fortune. And it still is very easy to get stolen. And you may just lose everything.
Speaking of people losing something, talk to me about the percentage of homes that are upside down on their mortgage.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So first, you know, mortgages, the price of mortgages has come down. If you look at today's mortgage rates for anybody who has a great credit score, maybe 800 and up, you're now paying about 6.6%, 6.5% on your loan. If you're like the average person with a 700 credit score, you're paying 7% or a half a point higher. This is a far cry from where it was. And so as prices have come down, more people are applying for mortgages, which is good. But what Black Knight found is that 8% of homes that were bought earlier this year are now underwater. So what we're seeing is that, you know, when interest rates went up, the value of homes went down. People weren't bidding them up anymore. And so if you bought this year in some locations, you're seeing that home prices have slid anywhere from a half a percent to as much as, you know, 5 or 8%. And they're expecting that mortgage, the value of homes will come down even more in some neighborhoods. So according to Black Knight, which watches all this stuff, More than 25% of VA FHA homes are now in negative equity, meaning that they're worth less than what they were paid for them. And 80% have less than 10% equity, means they're right on the line. They're kind of functionally, what we say, functionally negative equity, because if you had to sell, there would be costs associated with the sell, and then you'd have to bring cash to the table. So it's certainly something to watch, because we had such a huge run-up in prices. Again, not in Chicago, where I think things are sort of holding steady.
Interesting stuff from Elise Link. You can hear her Sunday mornings with Tom Fortino at 6:30. You guys are going to get a new time after the first of the year. Did I hear that?
You did. It's very exciting. We're moving to 7 o'clock, and we are expanding the show. So it'll be a full hour, 7 to 8 o'clock on Sunday mornings. A little bit more reasonable if you want to sleep in.
And a little more time for the content that you and Tom provide.
ThinkGlink.com. Thank you, John.
That's Elise Glink This Week in Wealth with Tom, now at 6:30, soon to be at 7. Jim Dahlke joins us regularly to talk about all things tech. He's the national editor at American Inno. You can find his stuff at chicagoinno.com. Welcome back, Jim. I hope you're good.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
I'm not that familiar with this Level X, but I'm intrigued by what I'm reading. Talk to me a little bit about it.
Yeah, we wrote about Level X, a Chicago startup. They are going to be part of a future SpaceX mission. So the Chicago startup is headed to outer space. It's a really interesting partnership here. Essentially, Level X has created video games for doctors. So they allow doctors to kind of practice on surgeries, practice kind of diagnosing conditions, wide range of different types of issues on an iPhone, essentially. So really kind of allowing doctors to do a lot of practicing before they kind of get into the surgery room specifically. And yeah, Level X is going to be working with SpaceX in a mission that's expected to launch in March 2023, allowing the astronauts up there to practice ultrasounds from an iPhone. You can imagine that, you know, if something were to go horribly wrong on a mission in outer space, and you can think of an astronaut sort of clutching their chest, you need to perform an ultrasound to see what's going on. Level X is kind of creating this technology that allows astronauts to practice, you know, using an ultrasound in zero gravity. And so pretty neat operation here. It's funny, Level X has been described as the deep dish hot dog of Chicago tech, because they combine two of the things that the city does really well historically, healthcare innovation, as well as video games. So Chicago is home to Midway Games, which, of course, helped launch some iconic names like NBA Jams and Mortal Kombat. So the legacy of Chicago video innovation is continuing on here with Level X.
I never thought about that, that you can get somebody into space and you can do medical work. But what if somebody in space needed some sort of procedure or even diagnosis? I guess we need to think about that too, huh?
That's exactly right. And really, I mean, the goal here is to kind of make it as simple as possible. And so all the training really happening kind of right from an iPhone. So they'll be able to kind of practice the ultrasound in that way and in a zero gravity environment. So pretty cool stuff there from Level X.
In the West Loop, there's a battery manufacturer.
Yeah, a Chicago startup called NanoGraph been kind of tinkering away at creating better lithium ion batteries for a while now, and just landed a contract from the Department of Defense to create a new lab in the West Loop. So it's going to be a 17,000 square foot facility on North Noble Street in Fulton Market. You know, this startup NanoGraph is really no stranger to the Department of Defense. They have been working with them for several years now. They won a $1 million contract back in March to help create a longer lasting battery for the U.S. Army, essentially allowing the soldiers' communication equipment to stay powered longer. So another big deal here from NanoGraph is they continue to kind of work to make better batteries for the Army. And this new facility will help them do that here in Chicago.
Where are they located, did you say?
Yeah, so that's going to be at 400 North Noble Street in Fulton Market. So that's where the new facility is going to be. It's under construction, expected to be completed by the first quarter of 2023.
Everybody wants to be in Fulton Market, it seems, don't they?
It really is. I mean, we've really kind of seen that, especially in Chicago, as the tech epicenter kind of started at the Merchandise Mart and downtown kind of at 1871. And then, yes, the West Loop Fulton Market area has totally exploded. I think Google is a big reason for that. They brought a lot of talent out there. And we've seen a lot of companies. Talk, which was acquired by Squarespace a couple of years ago, they moved out there. And lots of tech upstarts are headed to the West Loop.
1871, speaking of them, wants to support Chicago's growing cannabis industry. How?
Yeah, so 1871 has announced the launch of a new cannabis program called the Cannabis Innovation Lab. It's a program that's going to help kind of early stage cannabis startups work with larger companies, growth startups, venture capital firms, and to continue to grow the industry in Chicago. You know, it's interesting. Cannabis has been legal for a bit here locally. We've had some high growth companies here in Chicago, but kind of comparatively speaking, the city really lags behind in terms of the volume of cannabis businesses. Chicago has about 95 cannabis companies, according to a report released the other month from World Business Chicago. That's woefully behind cities like Los Angeles, which has over 600, and Denver's got over 400. And so hopefully this new program will kind of continue to elevate, the cannabis firms here in Chicago, connecting them with some more established companies and access to capital in the city as well.
Do you know what the status, this is a little off topic here, but what is the status of money moved in and out of cannabis businesses because it was cash only, because it federally wasn't allowed, even though some states did? Do you know much about the banking or the commerce of these businesses per se?
Yeah, it's a great question. There's actually quite a few tech startups that are working on this issue directly. So yes, it's sort of a cash-only business. Really, there's some companies like LeafTrade and some others actually in Chicago that are working on tech solutions to kind of facilitate the banking problems that the industry faces. And so, yeah, I mean, basically what happens is sort of the big credit card facilitators like Visa, for example, doesn't really want to be a part of the cannabis business quite yet. So the industry has got to be a little creative on how it kind of handles the commerce, right? And so we are certainly seeing a handful of businesses in Chicago and elsewhere that are working on this pain point specifically.
Interesting. Good to know. That's Jim Dahlke, national editor at American Inno. And you can read more at chicagoinno.com. And I don't know what that was, but Jim, you have a good day. We'll visit again.
Thanks, Sean.
On the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago's hometown airline United is in late-stage talks with Boeing and Airbus for new plane orders for an overhaul of its fleet. Bloomberg says the deal includes a mix of narrow and wide-body jet models. United could purchase more than 100 787 Dreamliners and could change an earlier Airbus order to include the new A321neo. Parts of the order could be unveiled within weeks, but the terms and timing are in flux. The deal could cost multi-billions of dollars. There's been no comment from United, Boeing, and Airbus to this story. The Obama Presidential Center has started the search for a restaurant partner who will operate its dining and catering operations. Cranes reports the center considering operators from the city's south and west sides. The Obama Foundation put out the request for proposals last week. The company that's chosen will oversee catering and operate a restaurant and cafe with seating for 200 people at the center, which is currently under construction in Jackson Park. The restaurant partner would also be involved in healthy cooking and eating classes. The restaurant and cafe will open in 2025 at the same time the Obama Presidential Center opens to the public. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Yes, and I have Confessions of a Cardiologist for you today. Sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com.
You are what you eat, from your head down to your feet.
Remember that from Saturday morning TV in the 70s and 80s? Dr. Elizabeth Clotus wants to talk about eating. She's been a cardiologist for more than 25 years. And here she is with that confession.
No matter how perfect I got my patients' numbers, very few of them looked any better or felt any better. In fact, most of them were telling me I was making them feel worse.
And she says while some of us absolutely need to be on statins and other medication to keep our tickers ticking,
the truth is 80% of heart disease is completely preventable. And if you look at communities around the globe where heart disease is almost unheard of, the biggest difference between them and us, it's what they eat.
So, she wondered what part nutrition would play in treating heart patients, something she was not taught in her 10 years at medical school.
I was trained at Mayo Clinic, Johns Hopkins, University of Toronto, some of the top institutions on the planet. But how much of that was spent on nutrition? Zero. It is educational malpractice.
Teaching herself about nutrition, she created a snack and meal replacement plan and called it Step One Foods. The Mayo Clinic did a study on Step One.
That showed that in 30 days, with changing nothing else other than switching out two small things you're eating a day, you can realize on average a 9% LDL or bad cholesterol reduction.
Is 9% really that much?
Absolutely. If we reduce the average LDL of the U.S. population by 9%, we would finally dethrone heart disease as the number one killer of Americans.
And?
There were people in this trial that had 20, 30, close to 40% LDL reductions with food, not with drugs, with food.
Well, there must be a catch. Is it really expensive?
I can make a cogent argument that this costs nothing. This is not an add-on. This is a replacement.
And cardiologist Clotus says Step One is now shipping more than a million servings of food each month. More info at WGNradio.com. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
So it's that time of year again to do some holiday shopping. So how are and where are people shopping? Serge Kalimski joins us now, Senior General Manager at the Westfield Old Orchard Shopping Mall. Serge, it's John Williams. How are you today?
Hey, John. Thanks for having me on today.
So let's start there. Are people shopping more? Where's the trend going? Or for that matter, where is it, period? Do people shop more online or more brick and mortar?
You know what? I think we're having a renaissance in brick and mortar. You know, our retailers, from what they reported over Black Friday weekend, you know, we're pleasantly surprised with the consumer confidence remaining high, with some of our retailers even reporting 50% to 100% ahead of their projections.
Ahead of their projections, meaning whatever they thought they were going to get walking in the door, they're getting more people walking in the door.
More people walking in the door, and more people really just spend per transaction. So they're coming with a purpose.
Oh, I see. Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe it doesn't matter how many heads come in the door. It's how much money do they spend, right?
Exactly. We call it conversion in the industry. So, you know, the amount of, you know, the transaction per, or the dollars per transaction per visit, if you will.
And do people do this? I wonder if it's a hybrid, too, in that they may look online and then come and shop at the store. They may see it at the store and then go buy it online. But I wonder if they complement each other that way.
Absolutely, 100%. And I think that's why shoppers are a lot more knowledgeable about the products they're coming to buy, and they will start that journey of looking for exactly what they need. And by the time they show up here, they're more likely to know exactly where they're going and what they're looking for.
But you would prefer them to see it online and buy it at the mall rather than the other way around, right?
Of course, but I think they work hand in hand. I don't think we look at online shopping and retail shopping are two different things. I mean, they kind of go hand in hand. You know, a lot of these retailers, it's called the halo effect. So when you either open or close a store that's digitally native in a certain market, you see. So if a store closes in a certain market that's digitally native, they'll see their sales online drop. 30%, 25%, 30%, something like that in some cases.
Serge Kalimski. Keep going, Serge. Yeah. Finish that thought.
No. That was it. Go ahead.
Serge Kalimski is the Senior General Manager at Old Orchard. Are some of the retailers doing better? Are there types of retailers that are especially benefiting right now?
Yeah, I think from what I'm seeing so far, we're really seeing a continued strength in the athleisure category, as well as luxury goods are remaining strong through the, you know, since COVID ended. Beauty, and it's interesting too because formal wear is making its way back because of all the weddings that people had missed that are still planned out for the next couple of years. Those four categories, interestingly enough, are particularly strong.
So what's new at Old Orchard? How are you all fighting the fight these days?
I'd like to say, you know, we came back stronger than ever. Being an outdoor center in the middle of Chicago, most of my colleagues on the West Coast would say, you know, how the heck could you have an outdoor shopping center in the middle of the Midwest in the wintertime? But, you know, I feel like our shoppers feel more comfortable being outside. It gives a bit more of a urban atmosphere, especially during the holiday season where we have Christmas lights and everything like that. But some of the new shops that we've opened are, you know, Louis Vuitton just recently, a few weeks ago, Aloe Yoga, which is very, very popular, similar to Lululemon, Bar Sienna, which is a restaurant that's very popular downtown in the West Loop, called Old Orchard its home over the last couple of months. They opened in July. And also we have a brand new new concept, Bloomingdale's, which they call Bloomies.
What's the concept?
It's about a quarter of the size. It's very well merchandised, and it just has a whole new slew of technology and, you know, really focused on customer service and the experience as you walk through the store.
So Westfield Old Orchard is the third, I saw, largest mall in the state of Illinois. Is that right?
I believe that's correct, yeah.
I'm trying to figure out who would be ahead of you guys. Maybe Oakbrook or Woodfield? Is that one?
Yeah, I believe Woodfield's actually one of the largest in the country. And, yeah, I think Oakbrook is slightly larger in square footage. Yeah, I think we're the top three in
Illinois.
And
it's also an outdoor mall. It's interesting, isn't it? I wonder if, like people returning to work, people are – maybe the pendulum swings both ways a little bit, are going to want to have the in-store experience.
Absolutely. I think, you know, growing up, I was on the tail end of the millennial generation. And, you know, we grew up with Amazon coming to fruition, and it was this revolutionary, amazing idea, which it still is. But as Gen Z is growing up, the generation just below us, they love the mall because they build these relationships with the brands that they like. And they grew up with online shopping being, you know, it's not this revolutionary thing. It's just a normal, you know, aspect of life. So it's kind of interesting when you look at it in that perspective, because, like you said, I think the pendulum is swinging between generations towards having those experiences again and interacting with the brand in real life.
And interacting with each other. Going to the mall is something to do. You know, you eat, you walk, you shop, you look. It's not sitting on your butt. I don't know that going to the mall is necessarily a healthy activity in terms of cardiovascular fitness, but it's something to do. It's getting outdoors.
Yeah, at least you get your fresh air when you're shopping with us. And you're 100% right. I think, you know, we looked at malls as this, you know, one-dimensional thing maybe 20, 30 years ago, but now you're really coming to, like you said, have dinner, enjoy a drink, have a new experience, entertain yourself. And I think a byproduct of that has become shopping along with that whole experience. It's not the only reason you're coming.
Well, happy holidays. Our best to all of the retailers and restaurateurs and entertainment folks at Old Orchard. Continued success, Serge. Thanks for visiting with us.
Thank you so much, John. Have a good rest of the day.